The College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Negandhi.
And welcome to the College Football Podcast. David Pollock, Kevin Negandhi with you. If you enjoy the podcast, subscribe, rate, review. Feedback is always welcome. Fun podcast in front of us here on this Wednesday because we got a ton of really, really good games as we welcome in the Pac-12. And what's great about that schedule, and maybe not so much for many of the young men, is, you know, you got a noon kick on the East Coast and then you have Pac-12 after dark. So we're going to see the conference throughout the day and really good matchups, of course, starting with Arizona State and USC. And Mark Sanchez is going to join us and break that down, also give his thoughts about some of the quarterback play that he's seeing around college football leading into that Florida-Georgia contest. And we'll get his thoughts about the Masked Singer and that experience, and why he thought it was a good idea to sing karaoke in a costume. trust me, Mark is never dull, and a lot of good insight. And his perspective as a USC icon and watching quarterbacks from the hotbed of Southern Cal go somewhere else. And that is DJ Uiagalelei at Clemson, Bryce Young now at Alabama. Guys that are leaving the area, not going to the USC factory to play quarterback, and why that's happening. So we'll get his thoughts later on. Right now, though, it's time for Pollock, and we're going to talk about playoff expansion out the gate. Also, the matchup between Florida and Georgia, the difference. We'll make our picks. And there's one game that Pollock really surprises me on in the Big Ten on the decision and why he thinks this team is going to win big this weekend. Enjoy. Joined now by Get Up superstar David Pollock. Dadgum, I heard that a gazillion times this morning as he was breaking down the NFL. I like Pollock jumping in with the NFL conversation with all the fellas with Greeny and weighing in with Dominic.
So you like my Carson Wentz take then?
It was accurate. I had no issues with it because Sunday night was the first time. Well, I've been leaning this way, just having hope. But Sunday night was the first time where I'm like, I don't think this is working. I think what we see is what we get. We do not have the 2017 Carson Wentz. This is the guy in year five, and this is who he is. And that is making a ton of mistakes, trying to win the Super Bowl in every single play, and not understanding the basic concept of throwing the football away. The way that division's set up right now, all he has to do is just throw the football away and not give the other terrible team on the other side hope. So he didn't do that. He failed.
Right. It's not an NFL podcast. I got you.
It isn't. But you asked me a question, I answered. Okay. So you did talk a little bit about college football, and specifically you talked about a variety of things. But you've been on the air this whole week talking about a variety of things when it comes to college football, including last night on the College Football Top 25 show. And I want to bring up this concept because you said it on the podcast repeatedly. But even now more than ever, as we welcome the Pac-12 and we see the Big Ten playing a couple games, playoff expansion. And you want it this year, in a year where we have to adjust and just, hey, let's try new things. We saw baseball. We saw basketball. Try new things. Potentially, we may see the NFL expand even further to potentially 16 teams this year because of the issues that they're having. What's the number here for you for playoff expansion if you could do it this year?
I think I would do 8. And I know that probably sounds crazy, but we're getting half the games that we're usually getting, if that, from some teams. I think it might even be way less than that by the time we're, you know, all said and done. But I look at the race and I look at the running and, okay, so here's the dilemmas we're going to face. The Pac-12, if a team runs the gamut from the Pac-12, are they going to get in the college football playoff? I don't think so. I don't think they will unless, okay, first of all, everybody's fighting for one spot right now. Like, we give Ohio State's going undefeated, Clemson, maybe not undefeated because of the Trevor Lawrence thing, but they'll have a chance to avenge their loss. Alabama, obviously looking good in the driver's seat. So now we're talking about Cincinnati, BYU, a Pac-12 that runs the table possibly. That, first of all, the schedules aren't even that impressive in the Pac-12 anyway. So, you know, maybe the championship game makes it a little bit more, you know, a little more feasible. But you think about that right there. If we're deciding between all these teams and now maybe it's a one-loss Georgia – You know, maybe it's a one-loss Florida. Maybe it's a one-loss Texas A&M. Like, there's so many factors and so many things that goes into all of this stuff in this year where it's going to be crazy and it's going to be nuts anyways. I just want more. I just want you to expand it. Go back to your happy little Final Four and your playoffs next year. But this isn't the year for that, man. Not if we want to have everybody to have a chance and have a crack at the apple, you know, in a year that's going to be so ebb and flow and so up and down with all the circumstances that's gone around.
And then let's not forget Cincinnati and BYU. BYU beats Boise State, and if Cincinnati runs the table, where do they fall in the conversation? And I know you you took a little grief, and I love it because it's classic Pollock on Get Up, where he's just like, you hate numbers, and you just completely threw the numbers out the door in any concept, while the numbers basically say something about the facts. How about this? And this is a projection.
Hold on one second. Before you get to your stupid projection, I'm sure you're going to lay out on the table for us. Okay, I can take, Kevin, I can take any numbers during a football game, and I can skew them to my argument any way I would like to. Literally, we can take numbers every single week. Oh, they didn't run the football real well. They must have really struggled. They threw for 500. Like, you can take numbers and manipulate time of possession. Just, okay, perfect example. This past week, everybody points to the Kentucky-Georgia game, and everybody points to Stetson Bennett not looking good, Georgia not throwing the football very much. If you want to point to the numbers, that was like a triple option football game. That was like two triple option football teams. There was eight total possessions in that ball game. Eight. So we can look at the numbers and say, everybody sucked. The game was terrible. Both offenses were awful. Like, but there obviously is more to it than football. So, more to it than just numbers. So I think numbers serve a purpose, but numbers can't be your only purpose.
And you're right about skewing things. Completely accurate about that. But don't the numbers reveal when you throw the ball 13 times that Georgia is not confident in this quarterback right now when it comes to who's on the field? And Pickens is not on the field either.
And I will disagree with you. No, I don't, because if you watch the game and you say, okay, they only threw it 13 times. The first possession, they didn't even need to throw the football. They literally went down the field the whole possession. They chewed up like 8 minutes of the clock. It was absolutely just straight on the ground, like literally. So now as a coach, I've taken the game and I've shrunk the game by a quarter almost already. So now you can say every mistake is magnified, but you can also look on the other side and go, Kentucky's not going to beat me. Offensively, they're not a good team. They're not good, okay? They don't complete forward passes well. Now, listen, they also ran the football really well and held the clock really, really well and did a good job of moving the sticks and quarterback run and doing enough to continue to get first downs and somehow move the ball down the field and not score points. Like, they did just enough to keep the clock ticking. But, you know, I can take those numbers and skew them. But now, listen, do I think they trust Stetson Bennett to drop back and throw the ball 35 times? I don't. Absolutely.
That's my point. But that's my point, that they limited the game plan because they don't want to make mistakes. And then when he threw the ball 13 times, two of them were picked off by Kentucky. That's my point.
Okay.
Say that they reveal a little truth here in the understanding of the comfort that they have with him as a playmaker at this point in the offense.
A little truth, yes, but not the whole truth. And just like you just threw out there two interceptions. Okay. One was a batted ball by a guy that bounced literally right back to him. And it was kind of a weird circumstance that, honestly, it's just a whole lot of luck. Like, that's going to happen, but that's not Stetson Bennett's fault that he threw that interception, you know? So I just, again, the numbers, it drives me nuts. Just like Wisconsin's chances in the FPI, like they have the third best chance or fourth best chance. We all know that's not the case. That's not true. That's not going to happen. Like, Ohio State, that's their division. They're going to win. Like, you want a number, it's 100%. There you go.
Well, listen, I want to tell you about FPI and the analysts and our great researchers at ESPN may get mad when I say this, but I don't think when we put this out there, we put it out there to say this is what's going to happen. We're saying that after looking at all the numbers and processing with what they have, their own little system, this is what it looks like. And what it does is it creates conversation, right? And one one conversation I'm going to have with you right now is, according to ESPN's analytics, when you look at this, you know, this playoff predictor, the All-State playoff predictor, an early look, if Notre Dame were to beat Clemson, well, according to the playoff predictor, the Fighting Irish and the Tigers would basically have the same chance at a playoff bid if the Irish win this weekend. So with that being said, it's a top four showdown. It does not feel like this weekend's game is an elimination game, while Georgia, Florida, no doubt, is a playoff elimination game.
Yes, I'm with that for sure. You know, it's not, listen, Clemson's going to get a mulligan regardless.
Yes, they are.
Clemson's in a good spot. But Trevor, not having Trevor Lawrence, obviously, it's a spot that's, it's not, it's a good spot. It's a well-deserved spot because they're obviously coming in dinged. And that's part of the protocol for the committee they talked about, right? They talked about injuries. They're going to take that into account. They're going to talk about missed players. So it's part of it. So Clemson, I think, is in a spot where they need to show that they're a complete team, and they need to show that it's not just Trevor Lawrence. And their defense can play really, really well, and they can limit Notre Dame, and they don't just get pounded over. But I think Clemson's in a spot where they'll get a mulligan. Now, Notre Dame, maybe not so much, you know, and especially if it goes south really bad, and you're talking about going south really bad against the backup quarterback, and Ian Book can't throw the ball down the field at all, or they can't be explosive at all, then I think Notre Dame's chances of getting in there the next time is very, very slim. But again, what does Notre Dame have down the road? They possibly could have another match with Clemson. So they could rectify that. And then you could go, hey, Kevin, Ian Book looks great. The weapons are great. Look what they just did to Clemson this time. So both of them, neither one are out. I know that Clemson's already got a reason kind of to lose the game. They've got a built-in reason because they're missing their number one overall pick next year in the draft, probably.
It is fascinating to me when you do look at and we'll blend in the conversation of the line here. But it's gone from five and a half to five and a half. Depends on who you see and where you look at it. That Notre Dame's at home. Notre Dame has a fifth-year senior, a three-year starter in Ian Book, yet it's Clemson that's coming in with the true freshman who's making his second start, first road start, that's favored. And I find that fascinating. And is this – because Notre Dame's defense has been pretty good this season. Is this about
just they're really good.
Offense still trying to figure things out and Book still having a group of wide receivers that are still green – and he's trying to get on the same page. When you watch this offense, what do you see? Because they can run the football with Kyren Williams. But what do you see from Ian Book as he tries to get these wide receivers acclimated and moving forward with more experience?
Well, first of all, they run the football because, like always, they got a great offensive line.
Yes.
I mean, they just got a bunch. They got three tight ends that they can rotate in and out. But they're all physical. They're all good. They all can catch the football. They can all make plays. But and you do have Book that's and by the way, this would be the antithesis, by the way, of what you saw from Georgia. If you want to talk about from a standpoint of watching Notre Dame, Notre Dame came out of the gate with four passes right away. They literally threw, now listen, one of them got called back because of a holding penalty, but it was literally like, okay, we're going to try to figure this out. And every single one of the passes, Kevin, were dink and dunk. Like it was just, I think that's who they are. That's what they are. And, when I think about a matchup now with Clemson's defense that's hyper aggressive, Clemson's defense that does not give up running plays very often, like they're going to be really physical. And Clemson's been dealing with their injuries too, by the way, with multiple linebackers out and their best defensive tackle out. Like they've been through this too, and not getting help back. Skolaski's not coming back. Like he's, you know, him and Trevor are coaches this week, like Dabo talked about. Like they're not coming back to play. So I just think it'll be a challenge where Venables will make Ian Book uncomfortable. You know, another thing, by the way, Bo Nix gets a lot of heat, rightfully so, for evading clean pockets. Ian Book evades clean pockets too. And I would love to see him, you know, under the fire, be a little bit more of a fifth-year senior guy that's been through that and super calm and knows his answers and makes plays from the pocket. I think that will decide the game. He's going to have to make explosive passing plays to beat this Clemson defense, or else Venables, you see him on the sidelines with a get back coach constantly. That's what his players are going to be doing too. They're going to be chomping at the bit and they're just going to be like, attack, 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 until you give them a reason to go, wait a minute, I might get burned if I attack.
Let's play a scenario out. If Notre Dame were to win this game, but then lose in the ACC championship, would you take a one-loss Notre Dame team over an undefeated Pac-12 team?
Who's the...
Because listen, the Pac-12, the way the Pac-12 is set up this season, it feels like it's anybody's conference. It feels like it could be Oregon.
I disagree with that.
Arizona State. It feels like it's wide open. I believe that. So
okay, I'm wide open between those three.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
everybody else, everybody else is kind of just. And by the way, Oregon doesn't play either one of those guys in the regular season.
And then they don't even Arizona State face off in week one.
In week one, where you're kind of breaking in everything kind of new. So it's kind of interesting the schedule purposes. But here's the thing. What you didn't tell me is how many games does the Pac-12 teams even have? Because guess what? Their protocol is going to be similar to the Big Ten. Okay? They got seven games, bro.
Let's just say six games. A 6-0 Pac-12 team versus a Notre Dame team that, let's just say playing a minimum of 10 games.
How did Notre Dame lose to Clemson? What was the score in the second game?
10 points.
I would take Notre Dame.
Would you really?
If that's the case, I would take Notre Dame. Yeah. Now, listen, there's so many extenuating circumstances that you didn't fill in. Like, did Arizona State frying pan people upside the head and win by 30 every game and look absolutely dominant and just house people? Because here's the thing. By the way, out of all the conferences that have been behind the eight ball the longest – the Pac-12 was by far the worst. I expect a lot of sloppiness out of the Pac-12. I mean, those guys, they weren't able to go with their teams like the Big Ten and practice for weeks upon weeks upon months upon months. They weren't able to do anything. Yeah, Zoom, congratulations. That's not getting me in shape. So I expect that to be kind of sloppy. And, it's going to be hard because you're telling me, Kevin, I'm going to have Notre Dame with nine games. You know, two against the top team in the country. They beat them once. You know, it's going to be tough, but I have to lean on my eyes and who I legitimately think is the best, but
that is the resume. Key, right? That is, you have to lean on your eyes, and we will be leaning on the playoff committee's eyes more than ever since the playoffs existence, right? Because we are going to run into a scenario where we're going to see a potential team. And I'm saying seven games or six games. There could be they only get five games in. We could see Ohio State potentially play six games this season. And I think the eye test shows that's the best team in that conference, regardless.
Okay. But here's my thing with that. And I get that. And I know we're going to hear a lot about that. Don't reward Ohio State with a number one seed, though. There has to be – listen, I know it's not their fault. But there has to be consequences, and there has to be, you get data points, right? We get data points that we've talked about a long time with this process for winning. Dude, you don't have to be the best team. You can lose on any given week. And I know that sounds stupid and it sounds cliche, but it happens all the daggum time in college football. But if you don't play, you can't lose. So I think there has to be some kind of reward system for teams that do play more games and get more games in, because that does matter.
We've got one dadgum so far on the podcast. All right, so it is an official David Pollock podcast. It's a scenario that we're going to be talking about all season. And you know what? Where we were in August, I'm so happy we could even talk about this damn scenario because there are so many different things. And it's typical college football. By not having some uniformity, we have a variety of different regions to say, well, this is how they did it, this is how they did it, and this is how they did it. And that's why we only have a certain amount of games to look at this team, certain amount of games to look at that team. Let's go to your dude of the week. Who you got?
I got Joseph Asai. If you didn't watch the Texas game, it wasn't a highly productive football game. It was actually a very sloppy football game. I mean, Texas still hasn't converted a third down, I don't think. I'm obviously being sarcastic, but not many. It was ugly on their side of the ball. And then Oklahoma State could move the ball a lot, and Spencer Sanders threw for over 400, but they also gave it away like they were a nonprofit. So, Joseph Asai, though, was the only guy flying around the field that I absolutely loved to watch. He had 12 tackles, had three sacks. And by the way, none more clutch than on fourth down. And the game on the line, you need a play. You got to go get the quarterback on fourth down and OT. You stop him, you win. And Asai just – 46 just runs down Spencer Sanders from behind and makes an awesome effort play, lays out, grabs his feet. It was awesome. But he was a dude, stuck out the whole game, played his butt off.
Osai, by the way, first Power 5 player to go 12 sacks, 6 tackles for a loss, 3 sacks in a game since, ready for this, Longhorn fans, and Ndamukong Suh. Remember when he was at Nebraska and that Big 12 championship game in 2009 where it was super tight and the Longhorns won 13-12 on that walk-off field goal by Hunter Lawrence?
That's when we put time back on the clock, remember?
Yes, and Sue was just a beast. He was a one-man wrecking crew with 12 tackles, 6 tackles for a loss, 4.5 sacks, and nearly cost Texas that berth to the BCS title game. And, of course, we know what happened in that title game with Colt McCoy getting hurt and setting things up for Nick Saban and Alabama the rest of the way. So, Osai, well-deserved. The two stars that stand out, right? Ellinger making a play when they need it multiple times. And then Osai shutting things down in that fourth down and, basically throwing a huge wrench into the Big 12's plans and their belief and hope to have a somebody representing them.
Nope, that's over.
Thanks for coming.
They're gone. Yep.
Okay. No matter what, Oklahoma State, they beat Kansas State. They beat Oklahoma in the next few weeks. That you still think the conference is done?
They're done. And guess what? It just feels like Oklahoma's going to win this thing again, by the way.
It feels like Oklahoma, Texas at the end of the season. That's what it feels
like. No, I'm not throwing Texas in there. You can throw that in there if you want. Okay, well, you can throw that in there if you want. But, my God, Texas, that was a mini miracle for Texas to even be in the game against Oklahoma. Like, don't compare and contrast. Again, like, if you look at the score, like, it was nuts because Michigan State, Michigan was a clean football game. No turnovers. Nobody had those big swings. No strange bounces or anything like that. Oklahoma State and Texas, my God, you're talking about turnover battle 4-0. And then, by the way, they roughed the kicker, Oklahoma State, after another stop. So that's basically like another turnover. And just absolutely gave the game away. I mean, I left that game saying Oklahoma State is by far the better team. It's not even close. But Texas found a way to win, which is why you get credit for playing games, by the way, because that can happen. You have a day where the ball just seems to pop out of your hand and you fumble repeatedly somehow, because fumbles are a lot of, some people strip them out, but most of the time it's kind of you hit him in the right spot and he coughed it up.
Okay. We'll see how that plays out here, because Texas got West Virginia and Neil Brown's done a great job. West Virginia, a completely different team at home. Man, that's going to be a really good game. And, man, another storyline for Texas, Keontae Ingram will not be playing. Keep an eye on that. Poor Sam Ellinger running for his life and basically running with the football at home. We'll see what happens on Saturday when Tom Herman is a really good coach when they're underdogs. And when they're favored, that's when we start to say, uh-oh, watch out. Georgia, Florida. And I know we talked Monday a little bit about it and the environment in Jacksonville and how the crowd is broken down and what that experience is like, and that this is the biggest rivalry for both these programs. I want to pose a question to you. And it goes a little bit, because I think with dog fans, when they watch Ohio State, they have to cringe every time with Justin Fields and say he was with us. How much did the Jamie Newman decision cost Georgia this season in your mind?
Let's be fair, Kevin. If the Justin Fields decision happened first.
Of course.
I'm saying that that's a decision that was made that they could have won the last two national championships with. Like, you could have won. You could have won last year's national championship if Georgia had Justin Fields, and you could be in a prime spot again to win this year. So that's one miss. That's one big swing and a miss. And then the Jamie Newman, you can't control the opt-out and the circumstances around it. But, I mean, I think Georgia wins a national title with Jamie Newman. They were my pick to click. But obviously
– I bring this up for one reason, because Jamie Newman, I don't think it's Justin Fields, but the concept of what Jamie Newman can bring to the offense is the same thing we could have seen with Justin Fields and what Kirby – and we heard the frustration from you on Monday. We've heard it for the last couple of weeks, like the adjustment of opening up this offense and this concept of, hey, we need a quarterback that is a threat in multiple ways. And Jamie Newman would provide that They could have had that with Justin Fields. They stuck with Jake Fromm. And Jake Fromm was at the time, it you know, hindsight's 20/20, right? But they couldn't.
Jake Fromm was better at the time.
Yes.
He was better as when Justin Fields was a freshman, Jake Fromm was better than him.
100%. But you gotta find a way, I think, to keep these guys there, and then losing Jamie Newman. So you lose that dynamic capability at quarterback. And that's the one thing, and you've said it repeatedly, that's the one thing that is missing from this Georgia program, because they have all the other pieces around.
Yeah, it's just, you know, I think if you're a Georgia fan, you feel like, man, here we go again. You know, it's just, it's been the offense every year that it seems like just you're close, but you're not over the top good. And by the way, you know, these losses on defense aren't small losses. I mean, these are enormous. Richard LeCount is he's not the best athlete. He's not the biggest guy, and he's not going to stand out. And the numbers aren't going to tell you anything great about him probably, but he's the captain of the defense. He makes all the calls. He's a 3-year plus starter, and he knows everything about this defense, ins and outs, backwards, forward. And I think it's a big deal, him not being there. Jordan Davis, you know, not being there. This Georgia defense that you depend on, and you've been willing to say, like, this defense, you know, will lock down. It's a great defense. I don't think you'll see. And in turn, by the way, I think you'll see the offense open up big time and be way more explosive this week, because they're going to have to be, and they know they're going to have to be. So it's a huge week, man. Georgia, Florida elimination game. You know, this is the game that's going to be, it's going to be awesome. There's not a lot of love between these two teams. You know, Dan Mullen, one of the great offensive minds, versus Kirby, one of the great defensive minds. There's so many things we could talk about with this game.
And I want to add one thing too with Richard LeCount. You know, he tweeted out all is well. He's been moved from the ICU to a normal hospital room. He was involved in a traffic accident. So we wish him the best and a full recovery. And that's just what we're hopeful for. So with that context, because I think in a world where we live in, we're like, oh, is he just injured or is it COVID? No, I mean, he got in a serious car accident. So we hope everything's going to be okay with Richard LeCount moving forward. Yeah, and much has been made, and we started this conversation about Florida, Georgia, about Georgia's offense. The strength on strength is the other side, right? Florida's offense versus Georgia's defense, and Georgia's defense a little bit beat up. What can we anticipate to see from, you think, Kyle Trask and Kyle Pitts in this game? Because they're going to be leaning heavily on them, and you've mentioned this in the past. Things have changed in college football. It's not about defense winning games. It's, can you outscore people? We know Florida can score. What do you expect to see from this Gators offense?
And there's obviously always context to that too, right, with the offense, because, you know, decent offenses look really good when you play crappy defenses. So, you know, to me, but if you're going to win a championship and you're going to win it all, you have to have the ability to score points, because you're going to go up against people that, no matter how good your defense, at some point, those talents don't come around very often, like the Trevor Lawrence and the Justin Fields. You know, going into that game, you can have the best Matt Jones. You can have the best defense in the country. You're giving up 30 plus. So I got to have an offense in turn that can get in two or three games a year. If my defense ain't playing the best, they're going to have to give me that. And here's the thing I love about watching this Florida offense. I get a kick out of these people too, that talk about like covering people and talk about coverage, that don't know like the intricacies of coverage. How do you not double team Kyle Pitts the whole time? Oh, okay, sure. I'm going to allocate two guys to him all the time. Well, guess what? Sometimes he's lined up out wide. Sometimes he's lined up at the tight end in line next to the offensive tackle. Sometimes he's in the slot. It's a Where's Waldo game. Dan Mullen does a great job of moving him around, which is awesome and so smart. Because guess what happens now? We try to make things stupid simple, because guess what? Us defensive guys, we're not the brightest all the time, okay? We might be hungry and we can run and we can hit, but you make us think all the time with all these shifts and motions and where you do things. Well, okay, now Pitts is in the slot, okay? Now we're gonna bracket it. We're going to in and out. Okay, what's the corner doing outside of me? What's the corner? Now what's the coverage on the other side of the field? Because it's going to start with identifying where he's at. Okay, what about when he goes in motion, Kevin? And they send him across the formation. No. Now two other guys have to talk. and we have to bracket. And everybody else has to do this. You know what we should do? We should take our best cover corner and go put him on Kyle Pitts no matter where he's at. That's what we should do. Okay, he's an inline tight end. Now your best cover corner is in run support. Okay, so now they can run the ball right at that guy, and he's got to make tackles. Guess what happens when they split him out wide, Kevin? If he's on the right side, my best guy is going to the right side. Everyone else has to now adjust, cover someone else, and now talk about how they want to run coverage. So I just want to explain how much of an advantage it is to have a coach that doesn't line a guy up on one side of the field and just say, go play ball. That makes my life so easy. When you move people around like Dan Mullen does and plays Where's Waldo, dude, that guy, he's not a tight end. He's a wide receiver, but he can play tight end. But his hands, and by the way Kyle Trask delivers the ball, it's just stupid. Some of these throws, Kyle Pitts ain't open, but he's 6'6", and he drops it right in the bucket. So I'm infatuated. I can't wait to watch that matchup with Kirby Smart and how they defend it.
Taylor, I thoroughly enjoy when Pollock asks me rhetorical questions throughout the podcast. It's just fantastic. I love it. I love that when you're on a roll, you ask rhetorical questions. That's when I know you are locked in on something. Is that the game we should be all watching, or is there another game? Do you have something circled out west?
Yeah, I love Arizona State and USC. Welcome back, Pac-12. Welcome back at 9 a.m., by the way, Pac-12 time. you get it right after college game day goes off the air. You go right to Arizona State. USC and I've loved Jay. I told you last year. He was one of my guys that I told you he's Heisman Trophy good. Like, that's how special I think Jaden Daniels can be. And then Keaton Slovis, second year with that offense. By the way, Todd Helton. It's a kind of a crucial year for Todd Helton. And I think everybody gets a pass this year, kind of with all the circumstances and everything that's gone on. But I'll be watching that game to watch two quarterbacks slinging around, have a lot of success with a lot of weapons. It's just a great way to kick off the Pac-12 to have an exciting game when everybody's going to be watching.
Okay. And with that, let's transition because it's time to make our picks. Not a good week for either of us. And you came, I think you kind of put the jinx on yourself last week. You were barking about your undefeated run with your buddy, and then you suffer that first loss.
Got the first loss. The first loss on the teasers. We're now 20-1 on the season.
20-1.
Hey, but we did bounce. By the way, I like a couple games this week. By the way, I have a teaser that I absolutely love this week. Do I share it or just keep it to myself?
Tell
me.
That's up to you. I mean, like you decide that.
I'm not gonna put you
in a bad spot and just keep on saying, yeah, tell us all. It's up to you.
Dude, share the people. Make the people some cheddar. I got no problem with that.
Go ahead, share it there. Go.
So, again, I have a feed that's called Cash Them Checks. And every week the boys are chiming in. And every week we do this. And we went 19-0 to start the season. And the last week we went 1-1, which sucks, by the way. Hate losing. Not fun. This week, I love – so teasers when you do the three games together and all three got a hit. I love North Carolina bouncing back, by the way, against the Duke team that's really bad. They're going to turn the football over several times, no matter how good your defense is. And North Carolina and that offense is going to put up points. So when you tease it with three teams, you get it down to one. I love that. I love Iowa State -4. By the way, I can count on Iowa State to show up every week. Okay, you can depend on Iowa State. They are just a good team every single week. I can hang my hat on them. I believe in them. They're playing against isn't it Baylor this week? They got so.
Baylor's in trouble.
They're bad.
A lot. Yeah, they play Baylor lines 14.
Yeah, so you get it obviously all the way down to 4 with the tees. And then I love Oklahoma State, by the way. Another team, again, I trust their defense to show up every week. I think their offense will be up and down, but you've seen with Spencer Sanders, they're going to make plays. And then, you get the number obviously all the way down. And what is Kansas State at this point? If they don't have kick returns, punt returns or score on defense offensively with Howard at the QB spot, he's turning it over as much as he's making something good happen. So I think, that's my three team this week. I can share that with you and Taylor too. So y'all have it on the text feed.
We have fun with you on that stuff, man. So, all right, let's go. It's time to make our picks before we bounce out of here. And We're going to start out the gate here with Arizona State USC. And in this, we do a pick 'em, but I just always like to put some context here. USC's favored by 10.5 points. Who you got?
10.5.
Yeah, that's wild.
Yeah, and listen, I get it. You know, they returned so many guys that have played and are experienced. And listen, I'm going to lean towards USC. I don't think home field means much of anything. But I'm going to be very interested to watch Arizona State's offensive line. It was a sieve last year, homie. Like, it was so bad. And I think that, honestly, that's the difference in the ball game. I don't know that they can protect Jaden Daniels enough. Like, I know Slovis with Graham Harrell in that offense, the ball comes out quick, and you can protect your offensive line with that scheme. I don't think Arizona State up front is good enough consistently to hold up. So I'm going to go with USC, but I do think it'll be a fun game. It'll be a shootout type game too.
Oh, man. That
pull
line,
the trigger.
That
come on.
Really
go for it.
The heck out of me because I want Arizona State.
Wow. What's wrong with USC? Why are you a hater, bro?
Your whole explanation, though, makes 100% sense because Arizona State's line was absolutely terrible. And they miskeyed the Slovis when he wasn't there. But Jaden Daniels is a special kid. I'm going with Arizona State.
My man, that's what I'm talking about. I love it when you do that. You should do that. Go for it, baby.
Georgia, Florida, who you got? And by the way, Georgia favored by 3.5 points.
How? How? Like, explain to me how. Anyways, like, first of all, you go first, remember? So go ahead and go Florida.
I'm going with the Gators because I can trust that offense. I know that no matter what, Trask is going to score. Shoot, the Gators defense is going to give up a lot of points too, but I trust Trask and Pitts, so I go with the offense.
See, and I get that, but what you just kind of slid in there at the end was, you know, their defense is going to give up a lot of points.
Oh, gosh, their defense is going to give up a lot of points.
Yeah, and to an offense that we don't necessarily think is the greatest offense, you know, in the world, but it just kind of shows you where you're at with Florida. Now, listen, last week was better. They improved against Missouri. I like what I saw from them, but, you know, Missouri also had three offensive linemen out with COVID, and I think it obviously made a huge difference. I think Georgia wins this game for one reason. I think depth is the reason. They got so many guys that they can rotate in and out. They got so many guys that can play. I think you'll see, you know, the pounding of the football. It'll start with Zamir White, and then Milton will get in the equation, and Cook will get in the equation. And I just think that – I think this is the game that Stetson Bennett will throw and have a lot of success. If Florida's defense was the caliber it's been in the past, Kevin, this is easy. Like, this is a no-brainer. But I think their defense is just a big anchor for them, and I think it's gonna kill them. And because of that, I think I'm going Georgia in a close one.
Okay, you're staying true to your colors. Is Pickens gonna play? I mean, do we know the status of him heading into that game?
Oh yeah, he'll be there.
I was assuming that he'll play.
Yes, he'll be there.
He's not missing a game like this.
Okay. No.
Clemson, Notre Dame. Are we in both agreement? Clemson's gonna win.
Dude, I'm close. I'm close to pulling the trigger.
You're potentially leaning Fighting Irish?
Yeah, and I tell you why, man. I watched what BC did to Clemson offensively, and I know how much better Notre Dame is, and I think that Notre Dame can really cause some serious problems for this Clemson offense. I think they're good enough to do that consistently. Now, the wild card to me is, you know, I think Uiagalelei Lele can run the football. And by the way, I think the offense looks different this week. I think he totes that thing 20 times this week. I think him and Etienne are literally going to play ground and pound more of the old school Clemson you saw, like with Taj Boyd, Kelly Bryant. They'll still throw it some, but I think it's going to be, you know, one of those type of games. I'm going to go with the heart of the champions, and I'll go with Clemson, but – man, Clemson at wide receiver, they aren't dynamic, and they're not healthy, by the way, either, with Ladson and Nada. And I just – they're not – you know, even – you know, DJ also missed some throws out wide, too, that – listen, he's a freshman, dude. Like, that's going to happen. So, I don't think this is a gimme game by any stretch. I think this is going to be a great football game.
You're picking Clemson?
Yeah, I'll take Clemson. I mean
– my gosh, that was the longest answer to go with the Tigers. All right.
I just wanted you to realize this is going to be a good game.
Where? BYU, Boise State.
Who you got, bro?
I got BYU. I trust the quarterback. Gosh, did you see that one throw Zach Wilson made
He does that seven times a game.
It was an incompletion, but it was like a jaw dropping on the run, right in the heart of the basket, with two defenders around. The guy dropped the ball. It was amazing. I had to ask Mark Sanchez. I'm like, "You're the quarterback. Please tell me, was this a great throw? Because I like this thing's a thing of beauty." He goes, "Good gosh, yeah, that's perfect." So I'll text you the picture. But who you got? BYU or Boise State?
You know, Sears did well too. Game one for Boise. I mean, he was almost perfect. I think it was like he had like four incompletions or something close to that. Didn't turn the football over. I think Boise can be balanced, and I think Boise can score. But you're right, man. Zach Wilson's just playmaking ability and ability to scramble and make you defend the whole field. It's kind of stupid. It really is. It's kind of back. He would be so much fun to watch against a really good Clemson team, a really good Alabama team. So I'm with you with BYU. I think they score too many points, too much experience, too many grown men, too much physicality on the offensive line, because that offensive line is just there's some adults that can – you have that with the run game and the quarterback. Like, it's a bad proposition.
Okay, I saved the last two because I think these last two are the ones where it's just like, good gosh, who knows? Michigan at Indiana. Michigan favored by 3.5.
I love Michigan. I love Michigan.
Michigan.
Wow. Yeah, I love Michigan in a bounce back. You know, listen, styles make fights. And I think this is what we naturally do, which is why numbers can be really easily skewed too when you play really bad teams and put up really good numbers. But I think Michigan State has that. They've had that physicality brand for a while. I don't see that with Indiana's defense. I think it'll be more – you'll see more like game one from Michigan and their offense. And I'll be honest, if we're pointing to Indiana and Penix Jr. being – you know, really, really good throughout the first two games, I don't see that as much. You know, I think – you know, he balled out against Rutgers, but he really struggled against Penn State to the point where it concerned me. And then even against Rutgers, you know, he was efficient. He made some big plays. I don't think he's on page yet with the offenses in the past that we've seen from Indiana. So I think Michigan wins this one by double digits.
I don't know if I like Michigan that much, but I do like Michigan to win the game. And Indiana's played really well when it comes to heart. But Penn State gifted that game on a variety of turnovers, 10 penalties, special teams. I'm going Michigan as well.
FPI loves Indiana. So
do they?
They love them.
Michigan. Yeah. I'm not going with Michigan by double digits, but I'll go Michigan. All right. Texas, West Virginia. Texas favored by 6.5, but it's a pick 'em game in here in our picks. Who you got?
This is so Texas.
I mean, it's 100% Texas.
This has got Texas written all over it. I mean, it just does. It has. We're gonna disappoint you, and we're gonna lose. Like it just, it feels like it. It smells like it.
Set up? It's going to set up with Ellinger on the final drive with like a minute and a half to go, and he's doing everything he can, and they're inside the 10, and he's trying to make a play. They're down by 4. This is so setting up like that.
It's going to be like that, and what the heck? I'll go WVU. I'll take West Virginia.
I'm going Texas because Daigie's really good. I like Daigie, and I like Neil Brown, but I'm going with Sam Ellinger. Okay, who's our
you can't tell me you feel good about it, but
oh heck no. I don't feel good about anything with Texas in any scenario, whether I'm picking for them or against them, and it's the same deal with West Virginia. I felt West Virginia last week because they were in Morgantown. But if this game was in Morgantown, I would go with West Virginia. That's how I feel about this game. Upset special. Mine will be Florida taking the 3.5 points. Who you got?
So you went back to the Florida well, so we can do that.
Yeah,
we can go back to that. Okay, doubling down. So I guess I might do the same then. I'm forgetting my picks on who I picked.
So you picked West Virginia, which is an underdog.
Okay, who else did I pick was an underdog? Rutgers over Ohio State, by the way, would be
favorites everywhere else. That's all. Rutgers, Ohio State. The line isn't even up. So
it's 38, I think. Yeah. Syracuse over Boston College would be amazing. They're getting 14.
NC State's getting 10.5 against Miami. My boys at Temple, which have been beat up, they're getting 17.5 against SMU.
How bad are those guys? Yeah. How bad is Temple? Temple's bad.
Beat up with COVID.
Oh, you're blaming COVID. Okay.
Liberty's getting 15.5 against Virginia Tech. Undefeated Liberty. Those Flames with Hugh Freeze. 14.5 against VTech on the road.
You know how many it's going to take for Liberty to win that game, by the way? It's going to take at least 40. By the way, they're capable of 40. They're 100%. And by the way, I want to say this now before everybody else starts saying it. The hottest name in college football will be Hugh Freeze.
Yes, it will.
It will be at a multitude of jobs, by the way. If I'm Michigan, by the way, and I need to go tick for tack with Ohio State and I need some kind of excitement and offense, why not call Hugh Freeze?
Good nugget.
Don't you think that would be good? Like, 100%. I need an offensive identity.
He brought the offense to the SEC and changed how they view things and what he has done.
And by the way, he could beat Alabama. So maybe he could actually beat Ohio State.
Well, the difference between Ohio State and Michigan and that gap with Urban and what Ryan Day has done is just so enormous in the last decade. So they need an innovative play caller, plain and simple. All right, so who you got? Who's your upset special? Are you going South Carolina?
I'll take Michigan State.
Michigan State?
Yeah, over Iowa. Iowa's a 7-point favorite somehow.
All right. Iowa get the win. So
yeah, they turn it over at a nice clip too, by the way. They're pretty good at that. I'll take Michigan State, but I don't know. I'm not doubling down on any other game, so I'll just take Michigan State.
Glad you came prepared, buddy. Have a great experience on Saturday in South Bend, and we'll be texting you.
All right, brother. See you.
Welcome back, Pac-12. And I've been saving this guest all season long because I thought he'd give us great insight on the landscape of college football as well as his conference opening up the season. And he's my partner on Saturday, sitting right to my left. That is Baby Alien from The Masked Singer, Mark Sanchez, joining us here on the College Football Podcast. And you know what? Taylor said, I don't want to hear anything about the Pac-12. I don't want to hear anything he has to say about college football until we get the chance to talk to him about The Masked Singer and that experience. So, first off, it takes, and we are here to celebrate you, Mark. It takes a ton of courage to sing karaoke, I think, for anybody, especially if you don't have any drinks in you. But for you to do that on national TV week in and week out, what was the experience like? Give us an idea of what it was like to sing behind like some costume and why you decided to change it up with your accents.
Yeah, so thank you, Taylor, for wanting to know. Kev, I'm disappointed that you don't want to know, but I'm going to tell you anyway. And let's see. Somebody in my agency, this gal Savannah, knows the casting director at The Masked Singer, so that's how it started. And this was actually like 2 years ago, and it just hadn't worked out logistics-wise. The casting director also works on Dancing with the Stars, and I've declined on that a couple times and just was like, I'm not really a dancer, but if you guys ever get a cool karaoke show, I'm in. And so they came back with a real cool karaoke show, and there I was on season 4. They gave me the idea for the costumes. They gave me a couple different choices, but Baby Alien seemed like the coolest one to me. And it was a lot of practice for probably like 6 weeks leading up. And
are you practicing with like a coach? Like, who are you practicing?
Oh yeah, so there's a vocal coach on Zoom probably 3-4 times a week. And you got to understand too, like I don't sing all the time. So if you don't sing, it's just like going out and yelling a bunch and you lose your voice fast. So we had to like ramp up appropriately. It was like training. It felt like I was training for the Olympics or something, but you know, I could only sing a little bit each day and then we'd boost it more and more and more as we go on and gradually increase the amount. And then doing the puppeteering, that was, you know, a couple hours a day for a few weeks in a row, and then doing the choreography, learning how to work with the costume. I put a backpack on and put like these 20-pound dumbbells in it, so it'd be 40 pounds like the costume, and would run around my house. And I was essentially practicing for that. I'd turn on the Sonos in my house and sing over the tracks. And so that's what the coolest part is. You go in, you sing a bunch of different songs in like a studio, and then they'll figure out which key works for you. And they'll basically cut down a song to a minute and 30. And in that minute 30, you hit usually like one or two verses and one or two choruses of the song. So that's kind of how you practice. And they send you the tracks, and then you have the chance to practice as much as you want. You can practice with the vocal coach as much as you want. And that's pretty much how it went. And so my favorite part of it was, you know, I sing Faith and I Feel Good. I advance. And then you film these things back to back. So like back to back days. So I do Faith. I'm up at the hotel. I'm excited. Boom. The next day I wake up and I go do It's Time by Imagine Dragons. And there were a couple notes in there that we worked real hard on trying to hit. And I felt like I nailed them. So I'm feeling good right after the performance. And you got to understand, you don't see anybody. I don't know who the other contestants are. They keep you away from everybody. You have a team of maybe five people and they're in charge of you, and they keep you away from everyone and they keep your identity hidden. So I get done singing my second song and I'm like, dude, I nailed it. I'm talking to the vocal coach. She's like, that was awesome, you know, and I'm all stoked. Well, I see the seahorse walking on, and I hadn't seen anybody else's costume yet. And so I see the seahorse costume and I was like, whoa, that's kind of cool. And I hadn't heard anybody else yet. And I'm in my dressing room, kind of in this big like warehouse where the stage is and everything. And you're not really supposed to hear anybody else. They don't want you to focus on anybody else. You just worry about yourself. And so I'm taking off my costume and it takes forever to get off. It's like a 3-man operation to get this costume off. And then I hear Seahorse go on stage. And I looked at the dude, his name's Keith, who was like handling all my stuff. And I said, Keith, are you effing kidding me, bro? I said, who invited Celine Dion on the set? Like, what? Why did you put me in her group? I got so mad. It just brought me back down to earth, reminded me that there was a ceiling to my voice, right? And I was competing against real legitimate talent. So I was like, damn it. This might be the end of the road. It was really fun. Thanks, guys.
Do you think, though, you could sing without the costume? Like, here's the thing. I think I could pull it. I'm a terrible singer. I think I could have the nerve to go on stage to act like I'm singing because I'm hiding behind something. Do you think that helped you where you could hide behind something or what?
Yeah. So I think it helps. I think people who've known me for a long time know that that's my personality, that I'm okay doing that, jumping on stage and rocking out. Like, so where I used to live at this golf course in New Jersey, one of our trainers at the Jets got married there, this guy, Josh Koch, and him and his wife get married there. And so we're having a couple drinks at his wedding and hanging out, and I'm talking to the band guys and we're talking back and forth. They're like, oh, you play instruments? I was like, yeah, I play a little guitar or whatever. They're like, what do you know? You should come on stage, like, surprise Josh. And I was like, okay. So I went on stage and played and sang Mr. Jones by the Counting Crows. And Josh and his wife were like up front, like, are you kidding me? Like, the quarterback of the New York Jets and our friends just came on stage with our wedding band and just rocked the whole place. Like, it was insane. And so I got that text from Josh right after he saw The Masked Singer. But like stuff like that, I don't know. I've always loved karaoke. There's a piano bar called Bill's in New York that I used to go to all the time. And I'd grab the mic every once in a while and sing songs just randomly. And it was awesome, man. I really enjoy it.
I love it. I love hearing these stories. That it just shows your personality. And, you know, I think sometimes things can get lost and they're like, yeah, that's the Jets quarterback. That's the guy that was on The Masked Singer. But on Saturdays, we have a blast on ABC with me, you, and Booger McFarland. And I learn every single weekend something from you when you watch these young quarterbacks play on the college level. And the way you could see things and anticipate things, that is just 20 years of just staring at tape and experience everything. What do you think a guy like DJ Uiagalelei experienced on Saturday against Boston College coming back in the second half that's going to help him against Notre Dame this weekend?
Well, I think a lot of it is the confidence side, right? And the way they set up the game plan for him to ease him into the game, let him run a little bit, let him complete some underneath balls before he had to just open it up and try and go win the game. They put him in the right positions to be successful. And you could see his confidence growing and growing as the game went on. And whether it's like realistic or unrealistic, but him just running for that 30, 40 yard touchdown, whatever it was, on the fourth down, when those things, when you experience those things as a player, you get this like rush of supreme confidence. Like, yes, you know, things are going well. This next play is going to be great. And boom, you saw him do it with his arm right after that. And so I think taking that, he's going to need that. And he's probably thrilled that he had his first game at home. And then he's going to need that on the road in Notre Dame, because it's just going to be a little different. New locker room, you're going to travel, your lead up to the game is just a tiny bit different. And so you don't want to get knocked off your path of focus and, you know, attention to detail and all that. So I think it was funny. I messaged him right after the game on Instagram, just because he's a SoCal guy. And I was just like, I see you repping for SoCal, bro. And he's like, oh man, I watched you play in high school and college. Like, thank you so much for messaging me. You know, he's like a super nice, humble kid. And everybody you talk to around here says that about him. Very similar to Trevor Lawrence, you know, just a humble kid, excited to be there and happy that he's getting his opportunity. So he's a total stud. And I mean, he's got all the tools, that's for sure. So now yeah, just keep putting him in good positions and let him go play.
He is such a talent, and he's been such a talent since, you know, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth grade, when these projections come out on potential recruits, that it didn't feel like it was bigger. The moment wasn't bigger than him. And you living in SoCal, I'm glad you brought this up, because he's at Clemson. And then you look at Bryce Young, who's at Alabama. Yeah. These are guys in the hotbed of Trojan country, and where the program that you grew up in and the program that you were about, it was a quarterback school. Let's bring these guys in. They just line them up, every guy, five-star. They don't go anywhere. They stay here. They stay here. As a Trojan, a USC guy who's from that quarterback family, when you see DJ there at Clemson and Bryce, that he makes the decision to go to Alabama, and Tua Tagovailoa, who went to Alabama, what goes through your mind where you're just like, it's not a knock on Keaton Slovis or JT Daniels or Jack Sears. I'm just saying the five-star talent is leaving the hotbed to go somewhere else.
Yeah, usually those five-star guys would go and duke it out at SC, and then the loser of that would either stay and be the backup Matt Castle and go play in the NFL, mm-hmm, or transfer out and go somewhere else, right? So it's, you know, I'm happy those guys are repping SoCal and, you know, they're doing a great job. It's just your heart breaks a little bit because you're like, dang, what happened in recruiting, right? Like, we can't, if everything starts with recruiting and then everything in recruiting starts with the quarterback, like those schools, for the blue blood schools to be good, you've got to own your home state. And so I think recruiting's been a huge push. But like, you look at Carson, Leiner, Matt Castle, Matt Barkley, Cody
Kessler,
last name like a jerk.
Cody,
yeah,
Kessler.
Thank you, Cody Kessler. Yeah, so like all those guys were top talents here, and then we'd still get some guys from out of state. John David Booty, you know, one of the best quarterbacks in Louisiana. So that's what we used to do, right?
Yep.
So now other schools are doing that, and I mean, you ask those kids in, you know, eighth, ninth grade, where Clemson is on a map, they don't know where Clemson is. You know, like, you're in SoCal, dude, the beach, the mountains, the desert, it's all right here. Like, you don't know where Clemson is. That's just the way it is. And so the fact that Dabo's been able to come out here and poach these players. And I remember Coach Ogeron used to say, he would laugh, like when he'd see other coaches in the airport coming to recruit, and he would ask them if they're on vacation. And they're like, no, we're recruiting. He's like, for what? And he just like would point at the SC interlock on his shirt. Like, what are you doing here? Go home, you know? And so until SC gets back to that, then they're not going to be a dominant school. It's the same thing for Texas, same thing for Florida, you know, the Clemsons, the Alabamas, they got to own their home state and those surrounding areas. And then when you're that good, you just start poaching from, you know, places around the country.
Well said. And, you know, USC was a brand that could go literally all over the country at any time. And now, you know, the big storyline has
When Pete Ogeron would walk into your school, like, the school stopped.
Yep.
You know, everything was just like, whoa, that is awesome. Who's getting recruited by USC? They're definitely going there. you know, that's just kind of the way it was.
As we get ready for the Pac-12, Oregon, of course, is the storyline coming in, but you can't sleep on still the talent at USC and ton of pressure on Clay Helton. Before we get into Arizona State and USC, what do you think of, because you live there, you understand, you've played early games, but a 9 a.m. kick on the West Coast for one of the biggest games in this conference? Your first thoughts, and how would you mentally get ready for a game like this if you're USC and Arizona State?
So that's a weird one. And the other thing, too, is we just had daylight savings. So Arizona essentially is at 8 a.m., right? They're coming over here. They'll probably come the day before, unless they come on a Friday, right? They're essentially kicking off at 8 a.m. for them because the clock's just changed. So that's even worse. That's like tougher, you know, is it would almost have been better for SC to go on the road kind of thing. But listen, whatever it takes, you know, SC and the Pac-12, they can't have any excuses right now, right? They're starting so late. There's nothing for them to really gripe about because they need every win they can get. So they don't have room to be like, oh yeah, you know, we lost that game by a field goal because, you know, it was early in the day and the, you know, the committee that decides all this stuff is going to be like, oh yeah, well, we should take that into account. They don't care. Right. Like,
yep.
They're just like, dude, you guys got your 6-7 games or whatever it is. Like, you better be undefeated. You better win big and maybe we'll think about you. That's just the reality. So listen, at least the people on the East Coast will be able to see it midday. And that's the way they should look at it. It's a great opportunity for people, you know, around the country to watch them, even though they have to play so early.
How do you view this game? Slovis on one side, Jaden Daniels on the other side. I'm stunned by the line being 10.5 USC, especially when you're not going to have a crowd. How do you view a game like this? How do you view USC this season, as well as Oregon and Arizona State? Because it feels like those are the three teams that will be in the conversation, and we could eliminate one of them probably by 3:30 East Coast time after the Arizona State USC.
No doubt. Yeah, if you lose this game, that's essentially curtains for those teams, because even if they cannibalize each other, they're not going to get a chance in the college football playoff, right? If we're talking playoff, then these guys have to win, and so. Listen, I think everything favors, like we've seen already, teams that have head coaches that were already there and quarterbacks that were already there, right? I think a lot is going to come down to special teams, could be some hidden points in the game, but SC got a lot of their guys back that were potentially thinking about opting out, say for maybe one on defense, I believe. But to get Amon-Ra St. Brown back is huge, and him and Keaton Slovis have a great chemistry. But like you said, I mean, this kid, Jaden Daniels, is no slouch, man. He can run. He's going to cause problems for that USC defense, and that's been the problem for them. They have a new defensive coordinator. So now it's, you know, do they show up like Bo Pelini and LSU in the first game trying to figure out their system and get waxed, and then a couple weeks later they start to figure it out when it's too late? Or do they show up like gangbusters and they know how to stop this kid and hold them, you know, to less than, you know, 14 points kind of thing and let their offense go nuts with Graham Harrell? That's what I hope happens. But listen, anything can happen on a Saturday at 9 a.m. Who knows? Some of these kids might wake up groggy. I mean, they're 18 to 22 years old, so anything can happen.
All right. So that's a huge game. And a handful, Clemson, Notre Dame, we touched on as a top four matchup. But really, the elimination game is Florida versus Georgia. And when you watch the tape, what do you see from Kyle Trask and what do you see from Stetson Bennett here that could really help the viewer watching this game on Saturday afternoon?
Yeah, I think one of the most important things for Kyle Trask and that offense, Coach Mullins, they have to get Pitts as their one or two receiver in all their progressions, right? So what do I mean? Like, you run your main concepts, but position him, just move him around like a chess piece on the board to be the first read or the second read on like at least 15 of your pass plays, right? Like, probably your first 15 is what I would do, because when that kid touches the ball, one, you can't guard him, and two, you can't tackle him. So all you got to do is get the ball near him and you got a shot, right? Like, that's proven. They've had plenty of time to see that. And the fact that he's still playing and hasn't opted out right now just to go be the first tight end taken overall is crazy to me. So as long as he's on the field, get him the ball, right? That's most important. And then the other one for Georgia, what I saw on TV last week, and I said this to Kev, is on air, but he's got this like three-quarter arm delivery, right? And he's already had balls tipped by the defensive lineman at Alabama, and it happened again last week, and they intercepted. Now, he's, what, 5'11", so he's already pretty short for quarterback standards. And if he throws at that three-quarter delivery, he's throwing at like anywhere from 5'8 to 5'10, right? At a height of 5'8 to 5'10. And that's really low. That's really easy to reach up and touch for a D lineman. These guys are big. So you look at guys like Drew Brees, Russell Wilson, who are about the same size, and they do the same thing, but they don't get those balls tipped. And really the difference is they've mastered throwing in those windows between offensive linemen and learning to anticipate, you know, crossing routes and, you know, moving and manipulating the pocket to get to a position to throw through a clear open window. Now, it can't happen every time, and you can't be looking at the rush. There's a very fine line and a subtle way to do it. But I think until they get that figured out, it's going to continue to be a problem for them. They got to fix that if they want to win.
All right, before I let you go here, you've been a couple years removed from your NFL career. You know, we were talking over the weekend, and I'm still stunned you're only 33. How much do you miss playing? How much do you miss it? How much do you think about it on Saturdays and Sundays? Is it still part of you when you wake up, or is it like, hey, I am glad I can move on? Because, listen, you've got a lot of other things going on. Football was part of your life, but I admire that you have a lot of other things, so it's not the only thing in your life. So how much do you miss playing on the weekends?
Man, there's nothing like a college football game, and in a totally similar and different way at the same time, there's nothing like an NFL game. They're very different and very similar. A lot of the same emotions go into it, different paths to Saturday and Sunday, but they're both a huge part of my life. And you got to understand, like, football was everything I've ever wanted in life to accomplish, right? So then for a lot of guys, when you make a transition out of that, there's like, that's very, very difficult. And they get themselves in a lot of trouble because they don't know what to do. And they lose some sort of their identity, right? Or maybe all of their identity. And I'm very thankful, one, for the opportunity. And close your ears, Kev, but to work with Kevin Negandhi, to get a chance at ESPN and ABC. So to have something to jump into right away that's still close to the game that you identify with so much. And then the other big thing was, and you know how close I am with DJ, Kev, but my son, who's going to be four here in a few weeks, he became this new, you know, obviously a new life, but a new part of my identity as a father. And that was so much bigger than football could have ever been. And football used to be the biggest thing in the world, right? So that was this crazy transition for me, but I'm so thankful it happened. And it, you know, it opened my eyes a lot to what else there is out there, and watching, you know, getting the satisfaction of watching my kid during quarantine learn how to swim and learn a new skill and just see his mind working a million miles an hour and then, you know, adapting and figuring something out and achieving something that he wanted to do. Like, that's the same kind of rush you get from throwing a touchdown that wins the game, the same kind of rush you get from, you know, holding the sword on top of the ladder after the Rose Bowl. Like, those are wonderful feelings, and you can get them other places in life, right? Football's not the only thing for that, but it just was for me for, you know, 30 plus years of my life. And so it's just been a great transition for me. I feel like I'm in a good spot. I do have a lot going on, but that's what keeps me going, man, staying busy and having fun doing it all.
Well said, man. Really well said. You're a great father, and DJ's very lucky to have you in his life. And before we let you go,
sure,
give your shout out. Well, give your podcast a shout out. What's the podcast, and where can people get it?
Yeah. So it's on the Showtime platform with Showtime Sports. You can go to their YouTube channel or to ours, YouTube, / Fourth and Forever. And so we just had Zach Ertz on yesterday, and that'll come out either, what's today, Wednesday. So we'll have it out tomorrow, Thursday.
Fourth and Forever.
Right in for the Philadelphia Eagles. Yeah. Your boy.
And let me tell you. Yeah. And let me tell you, Mark's got a variety of different guests. And him and his buddy do a great job. He has found his niche in this space, and I highly recommend Fourth and Forever. Check it out. Sanchez breaks down, and he's on the other side, and he's the one that's asking the questions, really smart ones, with his guests. Good stuff, buddy. I'll talk to you on Saturday.
Appreciate it, Kev. Thanks.
All right. Big thanks to Mark Sanchez. And it's just great having him and Booger on Saturdays. He fit right in transitioning from the NFL. And again, his podcast, Fourth and Forever, it's worth a listen. So go check it out. And of course, David Pollack, who was on fire today with his rhetorical questions. And, you know, we always have fun with our picks and his breakdown. And I'm with David on playoff expansion. I hope this year, but obviously hoping doesn't provide anything. But if we could make it to eight teams, and I'd like to see an undefeated BYU in the conversation, an undefeated Cincinnati in the conversation. They deserve to be at the big boys table if they're going to go run the table this year with so much unknown. But we'll see how that plays out, because that fourth team will be a big question mark, I think, the next 6 to 6 weeks leading into what we're going to see in the middle of December. Of course, Taylor Schwenk on the other side, making sure that the podcast is held together, not by duct tape, but it's a good glue. And we appreciate what Taylor does every single weekend. If you want more football, I just hope everybody stays safe, wear a mask, social distance, and we'll talk to you on Monday. Enjoy Saturday.